Hey there, welcome to Flight Risk Studios podcast show. I'm your host, Robert Bruton. It is April 24th, 2024. Thanks for tuning into the show, and I appreciate each and every one of you. So thank you. And today, you know, we've been talking about, just to kind of back up a step, we've been talking about, you know, self-education, having your own thoughts, critical thinking, and being able to do things where you say, you know, I made an informed decision, not following your peer group, although you can, and please make sure you understand this is very important. You can follow the herd, but you can be your own person within the herd, okay? If you want to follow your friends, your peer groups, or whatever, that's cool. Absolutely. But make sure that what they're screaming aligns with your thoughts and that you're not just trying to fit in, okay? Which is in and of itself is fine too. We all need to fit into something, you know, but we also have to have our own thoughts. So, you know, that's really, really important. I saw an interview with a young woman who is a popular singer, and she was on a podcast, and what was really uber sad to me is that the podcast host was telling her that she wanted to get to know her as a musician, and she said, "I'm not a musician, I make music." And I'm like, okay, well, that is what a musician is called. So, sorry about that, had a little glitch in the matrix. Anyway, she was talking to this singer and performer, and she was telling her, "I want to get to know you because you're a musician." And she goes, "Honey, I'm not a musician. What is that magic? What is that blah, 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 blah?" And she was going through all these things. I'm sitting there going, how can you, as a music person, not have heard the word musician in your life? And so I felt really bad for her because, you know, you want to be able to say, "No, hon, look, here, let me show you." And so, you know, understanding who you are, what you are, you know, and I'm not being critical and I'm not judging. I'm saying that it's sad that this young woman didn't realize that she was a musician and that she did make music, which she stated clearly that she did, and other things. She was an actress and all these other fine things. And I'm in the entertainment business and I'm sitting there going, you know, somebody, I hope, took her aside and said, "Hey, kiddo, let me show you something." You know, and you are, in fact, indeed, a very gifted musician. So, because if you obviously have a following and you have people who love your music, then you are an artist and you are a musician. So I hope that someone took that time to do that for her. And, you know, in order to not, and we all make mistakes. Don't get me wrong. I do all the time. So, you know, we all make mistakes and maybe say things out of turn. And my whole point to this whole little series that we've been doing is to be as well educated as we possibly can. You know, you want to be that person within your industry that people call upon for some sort of, you know, if they want to call upon you to be some sort, you know, why am I flip-flopping here? To be, you know, someone who speaks on behalf of the industry, you know, you might want to know who and what you are. And that's important. That is totally important, you know. So I hope someone, again, took this young lady aside and said, "Hey, look, let me show you something. You are indeed a musician, and this is why, because you are successful and you play music." So the definition of what you do for a living is musician. So, and you should wear that brand proudly as a musician, because when people look upon you and say, "You know, you're a real musician," you know, that's a good thing. That's a cool thing. So, that's why I feel it's so important to have knowledge. And that is a good example of the only mistake this young lady made was a simple lack of knowledge. And, you know, it's something that we all learn, and it's important that we identify just how much we do know about when you're in the music business and you don't realize you're a musician, then I'm going to say, maybe I need to learn a little bit more about the music business, you know? And that's what you see today in so many young people, is folks that are not able to identify with who they are, you know, not be able to articulate a good argument or, you know, I see so many people get on stage with, you know, especially conservatives who just rip them apart, and all their problem is just a lack of knowledge. Seriously, you can make a compelling argument either way, but be sure that you are very smart cookie. Hang on just a second. I think we're having a little technical difficulty. Hang on just a second. Sorry about that. We had a couple little technical glitches, but we're through it. So, anyway, understanding and being able to articulate a point beyond the FU or your, you know, this name calling does nothing. But if you have, and I don't care which side of an argument you're on, if you have a compelling, well-crafted argument for your beliefs inside, that makes you formidable. That makes you someone who needs to be listened to, someone that should be heard, because you make compelling points. And that's my whole focus on this last series. It's not to take a side with anybody. It's that if you're gonna take a side, then arm yourself to the teeth with knowledge, because knowledge can overcome a whole lot of stuff. Name calling and all that other stuff doesn't do anything. You know, you see these young folks out on these campuses, you know, protesting, which I guess is a rite of passage through college. That's something that has been done, you know, for a long time. You know, the 60s, the hippie movement was, you know, they laid the groundwork for that, I suppose. And, you know, if you have a compelling story versus screaming, shouting, hollering, you know, protesting works, but if you have solutions, get your crowd and educate them on solutions, not just rhetoric, not just evil rhetoric, not getting every pumped up, it's going to get a whole bunch of people hurt. Because there's only so much before the government's going to come in and sit down and put a stop to it, no matter what side of the fence you're on. If you're out there making a speech in front of all of these people who could really affect some change, and you're offering up solutions, ideas. Hate rhetoric is not an idea. It's just conversation. So, you know, it's any part of your life. And let's get back to what is the core of my podcast, is changing your life. You know, what can I do? Because it's stuff that I do. I believe in people's power to begin to stand up and take a stand. That's America, man. You know, doesn't mean that you have to like my ideology or mine yours, but I respect your ability to offer speech in such a way that gets me thinking. Gluing your hands to the pavement and blocking a bunch of folks that didn't do a damn thing to you just so you can raise awareness. Everybody's aware of global warming, Okay, everybody's aware of greenhouse effects. Everybody's aware, but you know, there's people out there that are celebrating, or I should say, there are people that should be celebrating, you know, green ideas, championing those ideas, and making sure that those are sustainable ideas. You know, to say that we're all going to be in electric cars by a certain date doesn't seem like that's a, you know, I think that it's coming too fast. You know, and coming up with alternatives to EV, you know, and championing those ideas and talking about the ideas. I see the good and the bad in wind farms, for example, and Texas is covered in them. I don't live far from a manufacturer that does the blades, because I go down into Corpus Christi, Texas, down at the port, which is the third deepest port, not largest, but deepest water port in the world. So Corpus Christi, and they service some huge oil tankers, and they're able to, Flint Hills built transfer station to handle the newest and biggest oil tankers in the world. And instead of, you know, we have that capacity and that energy. So where is the science that could make that a more clean industry? Instead of saying that you're going to abolish plastic, how do you make plastic more eco-friendly? That's the real test. Why are we not doing that research in our colleges? Food for thought. You know? Because when you go into the plastics industry and you look at the things that are recycled, well, there's some new science out that says that's not even a good thing, that it's more detrimental than it is helpful, you know. And nobody has, like, right now I'm wearing a pair of glasses that are plastic. I have metal frame glasses that are my everyday glasses, but the things on my ears and the pieces on my nose are all made from plastic. The shoes that I'm wearing have plastic, you know, they have plastic in the soles. The microphone I'm talking through has plastic in it. So, you know, to say that we can, that plastic is the evilness of the world, you know, water bottle pollution is the biggest, one of the biggest things is that, and there's so many water bottles in it, excuse me, you know, and all these pollution plumes that are in the ocean that are literally miles long, you know, that's a problem. How do you fix that? And there are some nonprofits out there that are doing really well with that and that are bringing home the plastic out of the ocean, where it's not a biohazard for all the species of animals that are in the ocean, you know. And it's just like fishing nets that get caught onto sea turtles and other things, and other aquatic animals, and you sit there and go, okay, what's the fix for that? Is anybody working on a solution for that? But to say that we can just stop all that right this minute is really not sustainable in any form. So the new things, I think, in the frontiers of the future would be, what can we, you know, how can we take fossil fuels and turn them into clean burning energy? Because if you think about it, you know, it's like coal. How could we go in and do something that is clean with coal? Is there a way? Is there a exhaust system, if you will, that actually cleans the air. If you can think it and believe in it, you can figure out a solution. If you're a smart cookie. So, you know, offering solutions versus just a straight out negative thing is a good thing. You know, what's damaging with, and what I don't understand and would like to see what these Just Oil people, I get where you're coming from. I do. However, how does hurting people, in the sense that, you know, you block people to from getting to their children or getting to a business appointment, a job interview, to the doctor, or just had a shit day and just want to go home, man. You know, truck drivers that are just trying to make a living. We all agree that the world sucks, but this is what we got to work with. There is no, you know, real good solution for it. You know, Tesla's got some trucks. I think Frito-Lay's and Pepsi are running some of his trucks. But that's brand new technology that's still in its infancy. It's not something that could be rolled out on a national level. And then what are you going to do with all of the millions of trucks that are on the road today? Where do they go? What graveyard do they go to? Has anybody thought about that? All the batteries and all the things that are eventually going to leak into the environment where they sit. The leftover fuel, the leftover oil. All of those things are going to find their way to the ground and contaminate an incredibly large area. Because if you put a million trucks out, even out in the middle of the desert, they're going to contaminate the shit out of it. Out on the other side of Marfa, Texas, there's I want to say it's 11,000 square miles of solar panels. What happened to all the animals and the species underneath in the desert that are part of that ecosystem? That now, because the panels are there, they don't get sunlight or they don't get the appropriate amount of rain. Because the rain comes off the panel and is pushed into one area. It doesn't just come down freely. There's going to be spots under all that stuff. So you could pick apart anything. You really could. So how do you make a point and craft a solution versus, one, hurting people indirectly through, you know, stopping all these things that only divides you from the people that could help you make a change? Because if I'm sitting in my car for 5 hours because you got the road blocked up in front of me, I don't give a flip about your agenda. Really don't, because I didn't cause this. And I'm not going to support you. I'm not going to get behind you. I'm not going to do any of those things. And I think I speak for a large majority of people that get in these situations. I don't think that you sit down and one day and go, you know what? I'm out here. I'm hot. I'm sweaty. I'm tired. I was just trying to get home to my kid's birthday. And I think I'm going to, you know, protest with you guys. I think I want to stop and do some. No. No. So here's my solution, my take on what could be different. Crafting impactful documents for social change. Things that you could do that have calls to action other than screwing with people's lives. you know, the power to persuade, the power to get on. You know, if you made, for example, if you made really compelling documentaries or really compelling short films on, you know, what it is that you're trying to change and put some social media power behind that, what could you do? So identify your purpose and audience. Before you start writing, it's essential to have a clear understanding of your purpose and target audience. Ask yourself what you want to achieve with your document or media and who you need to convince to make that happen. Your audience could be policymakers, community leaders, activists, or general public. Understanding their needs, concerns, and motivations will help you tailor your message and make it more effective. Now, here's the cool thing. If you got all these people out on this bridge and you've got them blocked off from doing their daily shit, okay, how many of those people are you going to get on your side? But if they saw information that was presented in a compelling way, then you might go, wow, this is something I need to pay attention to. This is something I really need to, you know. But shoving down the throat of potential backers, if you will, potential comrades in arms, if you want to say that, is a way to get a bigger audience. You know, telling me to go park my car and get an EV is not, it isn't going to happen. Then there's a lot of reasons for that I can't do that today. One is I'm not budgeted for it. I don't know, last I checked, electric vehicles were pretty damn expensive. I did, in fact, look at a Cybertruck, and it is quite expensive. Because I thought a Cybertruck was really freaking cool. And I talked to a lady on the street yesterday who had a Tesla, and she said she loved it because she didn't, you know, she just motored around town and did the things. And what got us talking is she had her dog in the car, and the dog, it was in dog mode in her car, which I thought was just the coolest thing because I'm a dog person, you know. That's the kind of information I can get behind. That is absolutely the information I can get behind. I'm not speaking for a vast majority of people who, you know, that if I'm thinking for myself and make decisions based on good information that you provided to me, that's pretty powerful. That gets me on your side. Pissing me off, leaving me where I can't get to access to where I need to be, is only going to divide us. I'm not going to listen to your point. Not interested in hearing it, because I didn't do anything to you, but you are directly doing something to me. So that doesn't get me on your side. I don't just sit there and go, you know what? I missed a very important doctor's appointment today because I'm diabetic, which I am. And I needed to see my doctor today to get, you know, whatever. Now I have to reschedule it. Have you rescheduled with your doctor lately? Yeah, it doesn't happen just real quick. It's a whole other podcast about state of, you know, they've got every hour so ungodly booked that, you know, that if you miss your appointment, you're probably going to get to wait another week to two to three. Not going to get me on your side. So how can you be more effective in your message? So, conducting thorough research to create a compelling document or media. You need to have a solid foundation of knowledge about the issue that you're addressing. If you can't tell me, so many people I see policymakers tear apart people who come to Congress or the Senate to talk about things, and they don't have a flipping clue. Even some of the policymakers that run the thing, they're asking them, okay, if we're going to spend $1 trillion on climate change and that and the like, what is the effect of that on the earth? And you could sit here and say, you know, it's going to save the planet. Well, you have other countries that pollute way worse than we do. And if we don't get everybody on board, all that shit goes to the same sky. Maybe in a different location, but it's still going to the same sky. It's still going to the same ozone layer, which we were supposed to not have now. All the acid rain was going to kill everything, which I'm looking out and seeing crops, my neighbors across the way, which he's having to grow corn from genetically modified corn or seeds that that he doesn't have any choice but has to plant. Yeah, there's a lot of stuff out there that's unfair and sucks. And can't use the seeds that naturally are produced from the plants that he plants. He's not allowed to use them, or he's violating patents, and he will get the shit sued out of him and probably get his whole life ruined because that's how those assholes play. So, develop a clear structure, a well-organized understanding of what it is that you want to achieve with what it is you're backing. And that goes for anything. When you can go in and you can and you have developed a clear structure about what your career goals are, what your marriage goals are, and you give to your significant other and say, you know, this is the way I want to structure the way I see our family and our family unit and our family structure, and you're in my long-term financial success together as a team. When you can articulate that in a way that makes your companion feel a part of, you know, it's amazing what you can do when you're on the same side with knowledge. I don't know, my wife handles all the finances. Is that really a good answer? I used to, my ex, and I absolutely will give her. She did handle our financial affairs, and she did very well with it. But she also told me what she was doing, where she put the money, and what bills she paid. And I mean, she was, you know, that was never our problem. And not anything that would have caused our divorce. So, but, you know, she did, but she also gave a compelling reason for her to handle our finances and for me to trust her, and I did, and I was never sorry for it, ever, not one day, not one day. So because our thoughts were aligned, our beliefs were aligned. And that's what I'm trying to get you to, or suggest that you get to. You know, when you start with an introduction that clearly states your purpose, and if you, I don't know how many of you have heard, you know, what's your elevator pitch? If you got on an elevator with a guy that could change your life forever, and it was just the two of you, and you got on the elevator, no matter what distance, let's say you had 30, 35 seconds at the most, what would you tell him that would make him say, hey, get off the elevator with me for a second. I want to talk to you. Imagine the power of that you can so succinctly say what it is that you're trying to achieve that it compels someone who doesn't even know you to say, wait a minute, I have a question. You may not have completely sold me in that deal, but you certainly got my attention, so I have some questions. Or the person gives you a business card and says, hey, you need to call me or call my assistant and let my assistant schedule you in, but I want you and I need to talk. And you did it all from your elevator pitch. That's how clearly and succinctly you need to be able to, because to make your point, because when you do get in front of people, you're going to have about that same amount of time to grab people's attention. You can't do it 20 minutes in. You're going to have to do it right up front. You're going to have to talk about and get people's attention from the get-go. Otherwise, your entire speech, if you're 20 minutes into your speech and people are just now starting to kind of hear what you're saying, or you said something that maybe should have been at the first of your speech, then everything else that you said that was important is now lost because they weren't paying attention. A whole lot more to this than you think. So if you follow this, a series of well-structured sections that present your arguments, evidence, and proposed solutions, you will have your day. You will have your moment. Using persuasive language, the language you can have a significant impact on how your audience receives your message. Fuck you, Zionist, and all those type of things, or fascist, or all those kind. That's not a compelling, sorry, it's just not. Use clear and concise and persuasive language that appeals to both logic and emotion. When you can throw back on your opponent a well-articulated phrase, turn of phrase, a word that makes them go, oh shit. Oops, I better get on my game. When you have persuasive language, then all of a sudden you might swing somebody your way. You might swing somebody that says, you know what, I've completely disagreed with every thought that you've ever made, but today I got to apologize and say, you know what, you make a damn good point. Because here's what happens when you make and we've talked about this in the last few episodes, and it's highly important that, you know, how many times have you belched out something, screamed out something out of your mouth, and gone, shit, I wished I hadn't said that. That was stupid. That was hurtful, painful, whatever the case may be. How many times in an argument with your significant other have you said something that really was not cool? So now it's out there. They can choose to forgive, but they will never forget. Because you said it. It's out there. So is when you do something like that, say you said something really horrible to your mother, for example. Something really shitty. Something that kind of hurt her down to the core. At some point in time, she probably, and you can go, you'll go and say, oh, Mom, I'm so sorry, I didn't mean. She can forgive, but she will never forget that you said that. Same thing with a husband and wife. If you say something uber shitty, they may forgive, but they will never forget. So how important is the speech that you're making? How important are the words that you're saying to further your cause? Pretty goddamn important, to say the very least. You know, avoid jargon and technical terms that confuse or alienate your readers or your people you're speaking to. Instead, use vivid imagery, powerful metaphors, and compelling stories to make your arguments more relatable and memorable. When people understand you and you become relatable to them, then now you have my attention, because now there's something relatable between us, and that's a very powerful time. You know, have powerful provide evidence and examples to your document or media are more credible and persuasive. Provide evidence and examples that support your arguments. And here's the thing that I would say, you know, you can sit here, climate change activist, and you can say all of these things, but there, in truth, is scientists who would argue with you from a different perspective. So be open to hear that. That's why attorneys, why lawyers can tear you apart, is because guess what they do? They understand both sides of the argument, so they can articulate their argument and make you either look silly and stupid or educate you on what they're trying to get you to understand. And it works when you understand all sides. You don't have to agree with it. Nobody's saying that if you listen to someone who thinks climate change is a total hoax, but they're a tenured professor, or they're a PhD, or they're a scientist of some note, if you don't listen to them, then you're really doing yourself a very big disservice. Because that also allows you to come back to the scientists that you do support and say, wait a minute, what do you say to this? This is a tenured professor from a whatever college, university, or science organization that says this, this, and this. Why is his science so much wrong to yours? And you may find that some of the people that you thought were being truthful aren't, or there is a hidden agenda. And that opens up your eyes to affect real change. You can say, well, who has an agenda? And what is this, you know, what's the end game? You know, you can look at, let's take synthetic meat, for example, and all the propaganda that goes with cows. You know, it's when you look down the chain of who's involved, what they own, what their long end game looks like, or something that you feel it looks like, then you sit there and go, well, you self-serving son of a gun. Because over here, your nonprofit saying, oh my God, it's destroying the world, it's destroying the planet. And you own all the businesses that are going to benefit from your fear-mongering. So are you being sold a sack of shit? Pun intended. Which it's not the doo-doo from a cow, it's the cow belching. And if you took all the herd animals in the world, are you going to start killing deer, elk, bears, goats, sheep, caribou, moose, wild horses? Going to kill them too? They don't do it on the scale that they say that cows do, but if you collectively put them all together, all animals do that. Herd animals, if you're going to put apple to apple, maybe this particular species doesn't put out as much methane as a cow group does, but if you took 5 to 10 species of herd animal and put them all together, what does that equal? That's what critical thinking does, is you say, well, okay, what if, you know, because they want to eliminate cows. There is some rhetoric and talk of eliminating cows. They're doing everything they can to and have successfully done it in so many areas where cattle ranchers are really a thing of the past, because they can't get a fair price for their cows, or they get weeded down. Because you know who when you go back and you look at all this, the biggest owner of the meat industry is China. The biggest processing house in the world, that's the biggest meat distributor in the world, in the United States, is owned by China. So see how that rabbit hole, if you just go down it a little ways, opens your eyes to a lot? Because there's a lot to question. A lot to question that needs to be answered. And that's what we talk about. And you got to go down the rabbit hole. Don't just come to the hole and have everybody screaming that's around the hole, but nobody's gone down in it. Everybody's standing up here saying, oh my God, cows are killing the world, cows are killing the world. Go down the rabbit hole a little ways. Go down the rabbit hole a little ways. Because there are things that are being done, you know, especially in feedlots where slurry or poo-poo is processed and done into different things. And there's chemicals that they're putting in these that help with the gases that are put off by these big slurry pools. And that's where your real, I think more than anything, I think that's where your real effect is coming from, are the slurry fields that are in these feedlots. So as you can tell, and I don't want to get off on, you know, but if you look down the rabbit hole, there's more to a story than just the people screaming at the top of the rabbit hole saying, you know, we've got to get rid of cows. We got to get rid of cows. They're killing the planet. They're killing the planet. We've all seen, or if you have, it's pretty funny, is they've asked, because Bill Gates is the one that's pushing the cow thing as hard as he can, but he also owns all the synthetic meat processing and science that's going, he owns the patents and all the things that are going on with that. So he has an agenda, and it ain't you and me. And so if we don't take a look in an open-eyed optic situation, then we're selling ourselves short. Because the thing that the point that was being made is that you see guys sitting there saying, I'll tell you what we're going to do. I'm going to sleep in the garage with a cow and or cows. I'm going to sleep in the garage, lock myself up in the garage, and I'm going to sleep overnight in the cows. I want you to take a car, turn it on, sleep in the car, and tomorrow morning we'll have a conversation. It ain't the cows belching, it ain't, that's not toxic to you. It's not toxic at all. So you can, I've slept in many a barn and I'm full of cows. Didn't smell good, you know. But there you have it. So, excuse me, guys. Anticipate and address potential counter arguments to your position. So if you don't like a conservative view, well, you need to listen to the conservative view, but then just name calling is not really a point of view. It's a nothing. It doesn't do anything. But if you can come up with a very well-crafted counterpoint, how much more ground are you going to get in your cause if you have a compelling counterpoint? Well, you know what, Mr. Shapiro, I see your point, but... And you tell him all these things and don't sit there and call him a bunch of names or, you know, all the... And I'm just using conservatives, Candace Owens or anybody like that. You know, everybody has a... And Candace Owens is really good about calling people out on this, is that, you know, people don't go up to the podium and ask her a difficult question. They go up there and make a statement. People are offended by you. Okay, good statement. But ask a compelling question. Research it. And that's on both sides of the fence. If you come up onto somebody that's, you know, a conservative and they're trying to go up against somebody who has a very well articulated point of view, because there's room for us all. We don't have to agree. We can actually agree to disagree and still be friends. I don't agree with every little single solitary thing that all my friends or colleagues believe or subscribe to. I don't. And they don't with me. But where we rise above the fray is we're able to talk to each other in a meaningful way and listen to each other's point of view and say, you know what, you make a good point. I just don't see it that way for me, you know. Okay, cool. And I make a point to my friends, and you know, it's just like in artistic things. You know, I might see a scene in a movie shot one way, and the photographer, the DP, may see it in a different way. The writer may see it in a completely different way and say, you're not even close to what I wanted to say. But you know what we do? We sit down and we work it out. Even though we have three different perspectives on a scene, and why can't that be? Why can't we collaborate in business? You collaborate with your spouse to make a better life. You're not always going to agree with your wife or your husband. My ex and I disagreed on many political views. Didn't keep us from loving each other when, you know, when everything was good. But we were able to talk about it. Sometimes she made a good point. Sometimes I made a good point. Sometimes neither of us made sense to each other at all. But we didn't sit there and go, you know what, I can't be with you anymore. Or this just doesn't align. You know, some single issue. This just doesn't align. We can't be friends anymore. Right? I'm gonna burn the bridge behind our marriage. And that's not what did it for us. It was something completely different. So you're going to burn up everything, or burn, you know, maybe your parents or your grandparents have a completely different view than you do. Does that mean they're not your mom and dad anymore? Does that mean they're not your grandma or grandpa anymore? Because you have a dissenting view? We were all born in different times and different stages of life. And I think as life has evolved, you know, and society has evolved, it's not always been a good thing, but it's not always been a bad thing either. It's just evolution. Some of it's going to be pretty, some of it's going to be ugly, but it's evolution. If I had to, from my perspective, say, you know, something about civil rights for anybody, women, Black people, you know, it was, I would say that we are certainly a lot further in where we were 100 years ago. and I know this is controversial, but I'm going to say it anyway. I don't, of all of my friends who are African American, Latin, Mexican, Spanish, Chinese, Iranian, from all walks of the world, not one single person within that group doesn't feel the same level of opportunity in this world that I do. And some are, quite frankly, way more successful than myself. My so-called white privilege didn't make me more successful in an industry, wealthy, having more long-term relationship, or whatever the case may be. I have friends that have mountains of success that I don't share the same skin color with. But we love each other just the same. We're not, you know, we're not any different. We're just people, human beings. You know, if you look within your peer group, okay, whatever your ethnicity is, and just Google it. Top 10 African American business women, top 10 African American businessmen, top 10 Latin American businessmen, top 10 Mexican American business, top 10 Mexicans business. There are billionaires in every country in the world. They're oppressed, really. There are some parts of society, you know, if you go to India, that is sadly very oppressed. But there are also a lot of Indian kids that are incredibly smart. A lot of good engineers, doctors, writers, photographers, filmmakers, hence Bollywood. You know, so you're only oppressed if you believe you are, in my humblest opinion. Because we've talked about, you know, well, I don't have access to education. Yes, you do. It's at your local library. Thousands of books sitting on the shelf. Actually doing a short film that is in production right now. I've been at the library several days this week. And you know what I found yesterday? And I had the coolest thing happen yesterday. Is there were two moms sitting in the same area that I was that had their small children. And they were homeschooling. They were having class in the library. And I asked them, I went up to them, I said, hey, I obviously I'm in earshot of what you guys are doing, and I applaud what you're doing. You know? And their kids were, and what was funny is their kids were bragging to me about what they were learning. They weren't bragging to me in ideology, they were bragging to me what they were learning. Look at what I've written. Look at what I can read. Read me a paragraph out of a book. This was a young little girl. I think she was like 4 or 5. Sweet. And her and her mom. And I was sitting there thinking, you know, imagine the memories that child is going to have doing those things with her mother. And she did, in fact, have a job. So you can't sit there and say, well, she's a stay-at-home mom. No, she wasn't. She was a working mom. But they prioritized their time. They made a system that worked. And that's a whole other topic probably for tomorrow, the next day's podcast, is how to bring systems into your life that will help enhance your success. So you can change situations. There are answers to all kinds of things. You got all these people that were in the library, and I just happened to talk to a couple, but there were more inside the library. And they disagree with what's happening in schools today. And they say, that's fine. I just found a different solution for me and my family and what works for my kids' education and what works for my family. Which is your right as a human being, which is your right as an American, but more importantly, which is your right as a human being, is to be able to educate your system, educate your children the way that you see fit. And these kids were very articulate in their speech. They spoke really well. This one little girl was telling me all the new words that she learned that day and and could recite to me what she had learned. And I thought my heart just was totally there. It was the coolest thing ever. But she made a compelling point as to why she didn't disagree with the school, but she said she made a compelling point why she wouldn't put her child in school and would do it herself. And she is not a teacher technician, but she had all the tools there in books. There was a mom part of the book and a child part of the book, and the mom would study and read these things, and it was just truly a gift, and it was a pleasant surprise yesterday. You know, and be prepared to revise your position, revise your media, revise your documents. Make sure it has a logical flow. Make sure that it's up to date in what world events and what things are going on right now. So stay relevant. So how do you get your message out there? How do you promote and distribute your documents? Creating a compelling document is only the first step. You also need to ensure that it reaches the right people. Develop a plan for promoting and distributing your documents through various channels, such as social media, email, press releases. You'd be surprised at what, if you put something that was very well written out, how many newspapers or news people might come to you and say, hey, I'd like to do a story. And community events. Where can you go talk? Where can you go speak? Tons of shit going on at the library. There's all kinds of event centers. Consider partnering with like-minded organizations or influencers to help spread your message and mobilize support. Sorry. And be prepared for feedback and engagement. And it may be things that you're sitting there going, this is exactly why I'm doing this, because all I'm being called is names, or all I'm being is threatened, or all I'm being is chastised by my peer group who is doing nothing more than following the herd. You know, the sheep starts walking out towards the middle of the pasture, and guess what all the other sheep do? They walk out to the middle of the pasture. Is that you? Is that really you? Because you can be in the herd, but maybe the herd needs to hear your words to become a stronger herd. That's how herds are built. That's how herds stay relevant, is the strong of the herd becomes the leader. And I'm not saying you change someone's ideology. What I'm saying is that you adapt your ideology to receive new and thought-provoking information. Hence the word thought-provoking. Makes me think. Doesn't have to change my mind, makes me think. And why people aren't being taught this shit in school anymore. And then lead by example. You know, you hear a lot of people say, you know, if you're going to be a good salesman, become a product of the product. You know, if you're going to sell RVs, well, you need to know a shitload of stuff about camping. Because you're going to put my feet to sleep if you go, well, it's got an oven, it's got a shower, it's got, you know, this and that. Imagine you and your family at this campground, this campsite. This is, you know, and kids, that, and think about this, and this is important. What do you remember most about your childhood? You know? It wasn't getting a new bike. It wasn't, you know, it was shit that meant something to you. It's just like camping with your mom and dad or camping with your grandparents. So those are the things that when you become a product of the product, those are the things that come out in you, and those are the things that compel me to go, you know what, I want to do that with my family. Because I don't give a crap how big the sink is. You know, I as long as I got a place to sleep, hang my head, air conditioner, you know, we're going to be cooking out on the campfire anyway. So don't put the things that put people to sleep. Talk about the examples of seeing things your way. How it affects that change in society. You know? You guys can probably hear my shades. The wind's blowing really super hard today. And so it's actually moving the shades. So I apologize for that because I can hear it in the headphones. You know, crafting a compelling document that can affect real change in society requires a combination of strong content, persuasive language, and strategic promotion. Get it out in front of people that want to read it. Get it out in front of people that will read it. In whatever media format that begins. You know? You have to research, write, and then distribute your documents in creative and powerful ways, mobilizing people to take action on what matters most. A well-crafted message, you can make a real difference in this world if you do your homework. Make me understand through your thoughts, telling me I will think this way, or that I don't matter, that I'm part of the problem, or you're part of the problem, or whatever. That makes what? No. You know, it. There's so many things where we get so divided in this world, and nobody really steps up and says, you know, you see, take abortion. No matter what side of the fence you are on, chances are you're immovable. You're not going to see things one way or the other. You're not open to listen to, you know, my body, my choice. Well, you know, it was kind of that way when there was all these women screaming that we all needed to get the jab during COVID. And as a human being, it was my body, my choice. So, see, there are immovable things that as humans who live on the same earth and the same planet, you know, there's always going to be super strong points of view. So how important is it to, if you're going to take a side, is to know the argument from both sides. You know, if you're pro-life, then you need to listen to the dissenting views and what people are saying, and vice versa. Wars. I've always said this. If you took two mothers that had sons or daughters in the military and were absolutely destined to lose their life in the war as a direct result of the war, and you put two mamas in a room and said, here are the issues, can we find peace? Do you think two mamas who love their child with all their being couldn't find a way to get along? Let's say that you do have a something that we totally disagree with. But in order to live on this earth successfully and peacefully, you and I have to find a solution, you know? So I think more than anything, we need to open our hearts to the fact that there are dissenting views. We don't have to agree with them. Nobody does. But you still got to live on the same planet. So, I don't know. It's all food for thought. So, I hope that you look at this even metaphorically, in the sense that when you're doing things in life, the more persuasive language that you use, the better understanding that you have of a situation. And that could be in parenting. Let's say you're a brand new mom and dad. You know? What are the goods and bads of all the things to raise your child? I saw evidence of that yesterday. And it was beautiful. Absolutely beautiful. You know, I see all these young people on these college campuses that are doing these things, and I agree, war sucks. There should be no, you know. I wrote an article, for Christ's sake, when Oppenheimer was winning all these awards and all these things, and I'm sitting there going, you know, yes, the actors and so forth were amazing. The Oscars and so forth, very well deserved. I'm in the entertainment industry, so, you know, God bless the craft and God bless the work. But the story, and I say it all the time, you know, if you want to impress the world, how do we find peace, and how do you take the industrial military complex, which obviously has an agenda, and say, okay, let's take all the brain power that you have and let's do this where you'll make as much money, if not more, doing this. How do you reimagine a war machine? Is anybody even talking about that? Nope. How do you reimagine the war machine? Just like I say with, and the reason that I say that is because there are thousands of families whose family members work within that community. So to say that we're just going to come in and eradicate it, a lot of folks got to get hurt to make that happen. It's just like, I'm in Texas. My family was in the oil business in different shapes, forms, and fashions. Back when the oil business was the oil business. You know? And back when the guys, the founding guys of these oil companies, were actually, my grandfather worked with some of the men whose names you would recognize, who were doing the same, had the same coveralls, the same work boots, the same everything, and they all worked together on the rig. You know, and so when you see all these climate activists come in and say they want to, you know, especially AOC and some of these others who say they want to eliminate oil companies and eliminate fossil fuels and all that kind of shit, and I'm sitting there thinking, you know how many hundreds of thousands of people work within that industry that you're about to decimate, when there's just as much science that you can put up on one side of the argument that you can on the other? And instead of going in and saying, you know what, let's reimagine the oil business. Let's reimagine a clean energy as a byproduct of what they're pulling out of the ground. is there a way to make an electric drilling rig, a solar panel drilling rig? Is there a way to get it out of the ground that's more efficient instead of pumping chemicals in it? I know lots of folks that are affected by fracking. So yeah, do I think that's a shitty part of the business? Absolutely. Do I stand against it for now? Yes. And I live right in the smack middle of the Eagle Ford Shale part of Texas. So it affects the folks that are around me. It affects the families that are around me. So could we reimagine those things? And that's what I'm talking about in all the things that we've been talking about for the last few days, and especially right now. Is there a way to reimagine something in a different perspective? Is there a way to reimagine a peaceful solution for Palestinians and Israelis? Is there a way to reimagine that as a different solution, as a different way than what is currently out there? Is there a way to reimagine our relationship with other countries who we call the boogeyman? Is there a way to reimagine those relationships? Is there a way to say, how can we live together? How can we prosper? We're better together than apart. My whole thing is, like, I have a hard time wrapping my head around scientists who go out and crow about making a missile that can obliterate a target beyond, I mean, where there's nothing. Every insect, man, woman, child, everything is gone in that instance. What the fuck is good about that? And then there's going to be people who could make a point that, that it keeps us safe. It keeps our enemies from thinking about doing something that to us. Well, instead of us thinking that the boogeyman's there, why don't we go talk to the boogeyman? And sit down and say, you know what? I'm tired of our sons and daughters and your sons and daughters being killed by the thousands. And reimagine a different world. Food for thought. So I hope that these are making sense. I truly am. Obviously, in some instances where you can hear the passion in my heart and think that, there is different ways, different feelings, different perspectives, and we just need to embrace that with each other. It's just like and I've said this many times, I have many gay friends. Some are very close to me, some are just acquaintances, and some are business colleagues. They all have different meanings in my life. I don't subscribe to their lifestyle, nor do they subscribe to mine. Obviously, being gay, they're not heterosexual. So, but we all, in many cases, are hugging, jumping up and down for joy, giving a hug when a hug is needed. Being a friend, being a mate, in the sense of being a pal, and being a collaborative resource for producing good art. So we can get along and not ideologically see eye to eye. Two of the most gifted filmmakers I know are homosexual. Their talent is, in my opinion, unmatched. And I just love being able to collaborate and work with them, even in the smallest of ways. And I'm not going to sit there and go, I'm not working for any gay person, you know, because I'm not a bigot. I listen to both sides of the fence. I don't have to agree to it. And that's, please, I think that's a huge point that I'm trying to make, is we don't have to agree ideologically, but we can still work together in meaningful ways. So keep droning on, because you can tell this is something that I love and that I'm passionate about, and I hope that you made it this far in the podcast, and I hope that it got you thinking about what your message is, how you can change the world, how looking at opposing points of view only makes you smarter. And again, you don't have to agree to it, but you ought to listen to it for your own benefit. So, and I apologize, during the course of the show, we had a couple of Matrix glitches. I apologize. But I'm just kind of that person that I just put it out there, man. You know, I'm not going to go back and edit and change all the crap and try to change the pitch in my voice. No, this is raw, unedited, and normally really unscripted. So I do have show notes and things like that, but most of it's just coming from me, so I hope that comes out in my work. So, any little old way, please like and follow our stuff. If you can leave a comment that's positive and loving, thank you so much. That helps us a lot. And if you have any comments or questions, I'm always available to ask. If you follow the link in the bio, it takes you, and there's a contact me, which comes directly to me in my link tree. So please feel free to ask any questions. I get them all the time, and I will always answer you, no problema. So, and it will also get you to my books. I'm actually doing our first video podcast, not a vlog, but it's part of our podcast on Spotify. We're going to start posting some stuff that are videos instead of just like this, where I'm actually, yesterday I was out at the park. We have a new lovely park in the city where I'm staying, and it's a beautiful duck pond with beautiful fountains, and I was in a gazebo yesterday, and I did the first part of the show, and I'm going to go finish it out later today. And it's just a beautiful area. So those are coming very, very soon. So, and it's about a book that I wrote called Turning Your Mess Into Your Message. So if you can, please go look at my author page, which if you follow the link in my bio, it will take you to where you can look at our merch store. You can look at our my bookstore on Amazon, my author page, I should say. We're on X, and we're on YouTube and Rumble, and what else? Spotify, Apple Music. I'm on Amazon Music. And our podcast is in the store. And we're on Google. I think I may have said that. So, any old way that you want to try to find us, we're there. So if you go look at all those things, I really appreciate it. And thank you so much for tuning in. This is the Flight Risk Studios podcast show. And I'm your host, Robert Bruton. And I am saying bye for now.